Good morning. Welcome to the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. I'm Ann Edwards, your lay leader this morning. We are an intentionally inclusive congregation, and we welcome everyone to our church. We wish to extend special hospitality to those of you who are new this morning. If you'd like to learn more about our church, please visit the welcome table in the foyer. Our meditation reading this morning is by Starhawk. Earth Mother, Star Mother, you who are called by a thousand names, may all remember we are cells in your body and dance together. You are the grain and the loaf that sustains us each day, and as you are patient with our struggles to learn, so shall we be patient with ourselves and each other. We are radiant light and sacred dark. The balance. You are the embrace that heartens and the freedom beyond fear. Without you, we are born. We grow, live, and die. You bring us around the circle to rebirth. Within us, you dance forever.
This is the season of the year in which there are religious festivals aplenty, celebrations of many different types of religious faiths. As part of a three-part series, I have spoken about Judaism and Christianity, and this is the third in the series, the third and final, in which I will speak about earth-centered spirituality. I presented that Judaism gave us great gifts that linger with us now and powerfully influence our lives. The gifts of covenant, personal responsibility, the prophetic voice, and the unmediated relationship of the individual to the creator of the cosmos were some of the gifts uniquely fashioned, yes, borrowed from other cultures, but uniquely fashioned and passed on by the great tradition of Judaism. And Christianity, I contended, gave us many gifts, but among them was the gift of agape, a type of love in which we love and respect others regardless of our differences, regardless of popular biases and prejudices. We build a bridge to the other, despite their otherness, and give them a love and respect we want for ourselves. The prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, I pointed out, was a particularly powerful and succinct expression of what agape was. If we look over the long sweeps of history, it seems as though Judaism and Christianity were explorations of the human mind and heart, to discern what was unique about the human journey, to discern a way forward, to be guided by moral and spiritual concerns. They were journeys of discovery, seeking to find how the powers of consciousness and choice could be directed towards moral and spiritual aims. And these great religious traditions and all their many branches created a world of possibility and hope and freedom from imagination and thinking. It was a world of great and uplifting and noble designs, a world of soaring hope, of paradises beyond this earthly veil of tears. the expectation of glorious realities transcending this mundane world and all its sorrows and losses. With earth-centered spirituality, we sense something very different from these journeys. We descend to earth rather than soar above it in earth-centered spirituality. We are called to live in and with the earth in all the intimate acts of our lives and not to transcend the earth. We can hear faint echoes of this alternative perspective shining through our culture in Wendell Berry's poem, The Peace of Wild Things. In this poem, we hear a person struggling with their limitations and their anxieties, seeming to find in nature some greater wisdom that has been lost to modern humanity in its technological maze of wonders. This gesture found in this poem perhaps symbolizes the hubris of modern humanity in all its technological and scientific glory, pausing to wonder if some larger wisdom, forgotten or lost, might be heard in nature if we but listen. Here is his poem. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go down and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. And we get this same feeling of finding a teacher in nature and of human beings reaching out toward that wisdom, contrary to the biases of the culture, to cure modern humanity's lost way, if they will only listen, also in a poem by a man named David Wagoner entitled Lost. Stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger, must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here, no two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. These poems are haunted by a sense that nature's wisdom has been lost, coupled with an eagerness to listen, as though for the first time, as though one's life depends upon it. This inclining towards listening to nature is, in fact, a very, very old path that others have trod, extending back thousands of years. A modern example is the Ute Indians of North America in the following poem, as they see in nature a very precise teacher and guide. Earth, teach me stillness, as the grasses are stilled with light. Earth, teach me suffering, as old stones suffer with memory. Earth, teach me caring as parents who secure their young. Earth, teach me courage as the tree which stands all alone. Earth, teach me limitation as the ant which crawls on the ground. Earth, teach me freedom as the eagle which soars in the sky. Earth, teach me resignation as the leaves which die in the fall. Earth, teach me regeneration as the seed which rises in the spring. Earth, teach me to forget myself as melted snow forgets its life. Earth, teach me to remember kindness as dry fields weep with rain. There are occasional hints of seeing lessons in nature in the Jewish and Christian traditions. One will find them there, but nothing quite as lavish and reverential as we find in earth-centered traditions. This movement towards seeing wisdom in nature is further developed in the minds of some and in the hearts of some who see nature not only as a teacher and guide, but as a companion, a presence, as hinted of in David Wagoner's poem, a other, not unlike a god or goddess, as in Starhawk's poem read earlier, Earth Mother, Star Mother, you who are called by many names. We are cells in your body and dance together. That sustains us each day. We are radiant light, the sacred dark, the balance. You are the embrace that hearkens and the freedom beyond fear. You bring us around the circle to rebirth. Within us, you dance forever. And this poem by Annie Dillard also captures this sense of reverential respect towards that great other nature. Every day is a god. Each day is a god. And holiness holds forth in time. I worship each god, I praise each day, splintered down and wrapped in time like a husk of many colors spreading at dawn fast over the mountain. The goddess, if you will, present in these poems, gives us a very different glimpse of the sacred in comparison to the theologies of St. Augustine, St. Thomas Aquinas, and the Protestant reformer Martin Luther. In their theologies, bred from Judeo-Christian sources admixed with power of the day and age, we see ourselves standing before high, impenetrable, invisible, transcendent, unknowable, inscrutable, and occasionally fierce, apparently male gods towering above history and the earth. This God speaks occasionally, as he does in the book of Job, with a terrible fierceness. In contrast, the goddess of Adler's poem and Dillard's poem does not scold or lecture, but brings us closer to a reverential relationship to the earth and a humble acknowledgement of our interdependencies. This way of thinking and believing is part and was part of human consciousness as far back as belief and worship of Gaia, a primal Greek goddess personifying the earth, and found in reference by historical records as far back as the 16th to 12th centuries BC. Very old indeed. We now live in a cocoon, an electric cocoon, enabled by laptops, Blackberries, home computers, cell phones, iPads, and all the other paraphernalia of modern life. And in this bubble we dwell, ever more disconnected from the earth that is our true source of life. But as the poet Horace centuries ago wrote, you may expel nature with a pitchfork, but it just comes back. Our hubris is the pitchfork with which we sought to expel nature. Global climate change is how nature has come back and will come back, bringing to our attention once again the primacy of nature in ways that we will probably not enjoy. We need to bring our attention back to that place, as Thomas Berry wrote, that our human destiny is integral with the destiny of the earth. Earth-centered spiritualities make the noble attempt to take us back to a respectful relationship to nature. And our religious tradition, the Unitarian Universalist religious tradition, rightly or wrongly, foolishly or wisely, has attempted to open our minds to all the great religious traditions of the world, including earth-centered spirituality. In fact, in the statement of our principles and purposes, it is stated that we draw upon Jewish and Christian teachings, humanist teachings, as well as spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions. Is it possible to have so many spiritual riches and yet be coherent and unified as a religious community? I don't know. The jury is still out. It is yet a noble attempt to draw, nonetheless, from many wonderful sources. I believe that it is possible to see this openness to many religious traditions as an attempt not to turn away from wisdom, whatever the source. And the great virtue of earth-centered spirituality is that it brings us back to nature and through nature to the great epic of evolution. As Harvard biologist Edward O. Wilson has said, the evolutionary epic is probably the best myth we will ever have. The true evolutionary epic, retold as poetry, is as intrinsically ennobling as any religious epic we have ever known. Richard Dawkins points out the limitations of other myths when he says, "My objection to supernatural beliefs is precisely that they would miserably fail to do justice to the sublime grandeur of the real world. They represent a narrowing down from reality, an impoverishment of what the real world, in all its glory, has to offer." The story of evolution, which earth-centered spiritualities guide us toward, is the best, the most grand, the most square with our understanding of the world and how it works, that exists. The stories of evolution have the power to truly unite all peoples. And to the extent that Earth-centered spirituality keeps us connected to the great story of evolution, it is all to the good. Finally, it is very difficult to read the story of the development of Earth-centered spirituality and not be struck by the belief that it is deeply connected to the experience of women, a group repressed on a global scale, even in our world today. And Earth-centered spirituality, as the representative of the feminine energies of life, is surely a needed balance. Judaism, Christianity, and humanism, despite their roots, are, in my experience, permeated by male perspective and dominance. Earth-centered spirituality, in my experience, represents feminine energies much more fully than those traditions. What is needed in life is a balance of the masculine and the feminine energies, not the triumph of one over the other. Let me give you an example that is highly simplistic, but it is garnered from all the years of experience I have as a minister. As a minister, I have sat in many, many meetings. And some of those meetings involve all women. Some of the meetings involve all men. And some of them involve a mixture of men and women. Now, which group would you like to attend more? I won't press you on that. But after years and years of sitting in these three different groups, I began to notice something. Whenever I was with a group of just men, the issue would always be something about there is a problem and we need to fix it. Or an alternative would be there is a goal that we need to define and pursue. Let us find it and pursue it. And the more concrete the problems can be, such as dealing with money, the better. And men do not generally mind if there is disagreement. And men in general like to have a position and defend it, and they don't mind if they go home after the meeting, angry if they feel like they have represented their point well. I simplify, but this is what I have experienced. I'm sure it's not true for the men at this church, but it is true. But with women, there is a different dynamic. With women, if it's all women, it seems to me that the main value is to strike harmony, to strike a balance of harmony, so that what the group of women are trying to do is, although they might be pursuing a goal or they might be trying to fix a problem, they are very concerned about everybody being in alignment with everybody else, and the meeting is successful if that peace has been struck at the end of the meeting. Now, when you get men and women together in a meeting, it can become very confusing because they have different objectives, and you can almost see the women adopting the male point of view and vice versa if they are outnumbered. This is very simplistic, but it has struck me over the years as valid. And that is what I mean by male and female energies. In reality, both energies are needed in life. To clarify a goal, to reach toward a goal, is valuable. But getting into covenant and getting into relationship and staying in peaceful relationship with one another is also invaluable. To the extent that earth-centered spirituality nudges us and moves us toward a balance of masculine and feminine energies, this is all to the good. Let me close my remarks with a reading from Black Elk, a shaman of Indian peoples. He had a vision. He had a number of visions in his life, which are quite remarkable. But in one of them, he reported this. I was standing on the highest mountain of them all. And around about me and beneath me was the whole hoop of the world. And while I stood there, I saw more than I can tell, and I understood more than I saw, for I was seeing in a sacred manner, the shape of all things in the spirit, and the shape of all things as they must live together like one being. And I saw that the sacred hoop of my people was one of many hoops that made one circle, wide as daylight and as starlight. And in the center grew one mighty flowering tree to shelter all the people of one mother and one father. And I saw that it was holy. Amen. I share with you these words of benediction. May the peace of still waters and the strength of our Mother, the Earth, and a compassion reaching toward all persons, leaving no one out, be in us and among us until we gather again in this sacred home of hope. Amen.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.